at last. The Constitution is finished. But if a super-duper big tragedy happens, this entire document goes out the window. Said no founding father ever. The Kate Daly Show starts now.
I am William Wallace, and I see a whole army of my countrymen here in defiance of tyranny. You've come to fight as free men. And free men you are. What will you do with that freedom? Will you fight?
No!
We will run!
And we will live. Aye. Fight and you may die. Run and you'll live.
At least a while.
And dying in your beds many years from now, would you be willing to train all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
Hi there, welcome, Kate Daly Show. So happy to have you listening today. Alabama, Chicago, everywhere. I really, Missouri, Utah, you name it. New York. Hi to you postal workers in New York that listen to the show. And hello to all you Californians that listen. I feel bad for your the state of your union of your state. And I welcome you all over the place, all you Canadians, too, and all around the globe. Make sure you go to katedalyradio.com, where there is over, 6,500 hours, 7,000 hours of shows there, and you can peruse those, and let's start educating America. Really appreciate all of you and going and sharing and educating and caring. And you wouldn't be listening to the show if you didn't care, so I really appreciate that too. I have such a terrific guest ahead, and there's just so many things going on today. You know, of course, Pelosi just has to be in the headlines every day, and of course, you've got all kinds of stuff that we'll be talking about on the show, from everything from CIA fronts, companies to, well, you name it, is on the show today. And to start out today's show, I just wanted to mention that I have a wonderful guest. He's been on my show before, and I really appreciated him through the years, can I just say? Dr. Kevin Gutzman joining me. And let me just tell you, professor, former chairman, Department of History at Western Connecticut State University, and faculty member, one of the rare gems, brilliant mind, does a lot of work. Ron Paul. In fact, Ron Paul's in the hospital right now, wishing him well. And he sounds like he's going to pull through, which is great. He's been on the show 5 times, and I've really enjoyed him through the years too. Tom Woods, just working with some of the most brilliant minds, and Kevin is one of them to me. And of course, so many different books. New York Times bestseller on Thomas Jefferson, Revolutionary: A Radical Struggle to Remake America. The Politically Incorrect Guide to the Constitution, Who Killed the Constitution, the Federal Government versus American Liberty, from World War I to Barack Obama, James Madison and the Making of America, just so many fabulous books you must check out from Kevin Gutzman. So I appreciate you coming on. Welcome.
Very happy to be here.
Well, I can't say enough about you, and you know that because I admire you so much. And I cannot wait to hear what you have to say about SCOTUS, about the Supreme Court decision and weighing in on that. And, you know, we were just talking off the air about individuals that are so hard at work at circumventing history and changing it. And one guest that I formerly had on, David Rubenstein, very well known, head of the Carlyle Group. His book was so interesting because it was so fluffy, and I did a whole hour on his book because it was full of like cute anecdotes about how the Supreme Court judges get along. How do you get along? Let's hear about that. Let's hear about barbecues, and let's find out if you like each other. It has nothing to do with anything, no substance whatsoever. And I thought, ooh, and he was complimenting himself on teaching Congress about the Constitution. And I went, when do you ever talk about the Constitution? Because there were no real principles there. And it's got to drive you crazy when you see books about the fluffery and the I swear to you, if I see one more comment about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, she got along with Scalia. That teaches the world to get along. I thought, this is your extent of what you expect on the Supreme Court? We're in trouble. What are your thoughts on that? I just got to pick your brain on this for a moment.
Well, I think this is part of calculated PR campaign to get us to accept the idea that the Supreme Court will be making important decisions that really ought to be made in the political process. So if you think that Ruth Bader Ginsburg was a real heroine, I guess we're supposed to call her a hero now because we don't use feminine forms anymore. So if you think she's a real hero, then you'll be more likely to say, well, I understand we're supposed to have elections and make laws through legislatures, but it's just as good to have her decide that her policy preference is going to be imposed on the whole country through some new made-up interpretation of the Constitution. So, I don't think that Rubenstein and people who write that kind of thing are doing that at random. I think they have an agenda behind it.
I do, too. 100%. And let me tell you, looking at Ruth Bader Ginsburg, when I wrote a kind of an essay about her career and the fact that we have equality in the Constitution built in early on, and that was equality before the law. That was already established. She really didn't do much for women because she picked pretty innocuous little items that she could work on. And then, of course, just created a career for herself. She gave herself a career in this, and then brilliant marketing, telling women she saved women everywhere with her bunch of bra burning feminists in the 60s and 70s. So her career is pretty dismal when you really take a look at what she actually did versus the marketing mantra of what she did. This might be the case for many of them because of the violations that they put forth in the Constitution, in dealing with the Constitution and the decisions. And one thing that has come out that has, I think, really been sad for the American people to not understand is that they cannot make a ruling. It's a decision on a case. It's an opinion on a case, but it's not a ruling federally for the land. Did you want to comment on that?
Well, again, we've come to have the idea that the Supreme Court is to function as a kind of super legislature and that whatever principles are laid down in a particular case, we should try to have ramify through the whole political and legal system. So I agree with where you're heading with this, that essentially people ought to be very hesitant to think that what comes from the Supreme Court is final. That is, it's final in the case between the parties.
Right.
But
for the state.
It's not but it's not a constitutional provision. It's it's one day's understanding. And it's often been the case that the court has gotten things wrong. It's often been the case that they've even later decided that they had gotten things wrong. So people really need to be more critical in thinking about these things than they are. There's too much willingness to say, well, if they said so, it must be true. Or if this is the implication of some footnote in that opinion, then it must be binding on all of us ever after. That's not the way the system is actually supposed to work.
Absolutely. And that a bad decision is a bad decision and that it needs to be corrected, not heralded through history. So we have a big problem with that. Of course, I think if there was something else, is there anything else about the Supreme Court that you wish people could pick up on? Because we're just not. And of course, the lying mainstream media is going to always tell their tale and have us focus on things that they want us to focus on and emotions rather than principles. But is there anything else about the Supreme Court that you would like people to understand about the way they do things?
Well, you mentioned my book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to the Constitution, which was my first book. And in that book, what I showed was that there's a longstanding pattern now of Supreme Court justices taking cases and using them as springboards from which they can enunciate great big policy departures.
Sure.
So as far as I'm concerned, I have been more irked by their tendency to do this than I have by particular outcomes. You know, it might be I'm a lawyer myself. It might be that I share their political preferences most of the time. But the fact that they circumvent the legislative process, meaning the Republican process of choosing people who govern us by having elections the way they do, really annoys me.
Right.
And I think people need to think about that. It's not just, in other words, it's not just, do I like the policy outcome in this Supreme Court decision, but is that really, is the court playing the role it's supposed to be playing? It's supposed to be just a court, not the ultimate legislature.
Yes. Oh, amen. And you know, this is a question for you too, Kevin. I'm speaking with Kevin Gutzman, who just a long career, as I mentioned in the beginning, but also PhD in American history from University of Virginia. How did you come out of this very liberal system of educating our scholars in America and not come out with the liberal ideology?
Well, I suppose if you have a big enough big enough core of people, you're going to have some outliers. I don't know. I think my inclination was just to start with the writing of the Constitution and the debates about ratifying it and see from there where the Constitution was supposed to head us. So I actually had my legal education first, and that meant that when I was studying the history of the American Revolution and the period right after it, the early Republic, I thought of things that way, more as an originalist, I guess.
So that
I guess would kind of answer the question. But certainly it's the case that most people who study, for example, the Supreme Court are admirers of the Supreme Court and are very supportive of the idea that the Supreme Court ought to make as many of our important public policy decisions as possible.
Right.
I guess if you didn't think that way, you wouldn't devote your life to studying them.
Yeah, so true. That is the truth. You know, I'm looking right now at Amy Coney Barrett, for instance, and she was kind of hiding behind Jacobson versus Massachusetts 1905. And if anyone realizes what that case truly was about, it wasn't about the forced vaccine as much as he was saying, you know, you've given me options and I don't want to pay the fine. He was never forcefully vaccinated, actually. And he actually paid the $5 fine in 1905. And it's interesting that that case keeps getting abused in the press as a case for forced vaccination, and she sided with the governor of Illinois in the lockdown, and so people were really surprised by that, even though she herself says she's an originalist, which is for the Constitution, which would be a very, you know, a huge contradiction in terms. So when we come back, I want to get your comments on some of the nominees, maybe the people they're looking at and what they should be looking for, because I think it can get quite confusing. A lot of people, the press is all about, she's a Catholic, and it's always about abortion, 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 abortion with every Supreme Court. But we need to talk about that, because I don't think that's doing us any favors. I'm anti-abortion, but I don't think that focus is doing us any favors. Be right back with Dr. Kevin Gutzman when I return. Isn't he wonderful? Be right back.
There will never be a dispute over whether fruits and vegetables help supply the nutrients your body needs to build a strong and healthy immune system, which is vital in protecting you from outside invaders, such as bacteria and viruses. Balance of Nature provides you with all your recommended servings of fruits and vegetables with a combination of 31 different organically grown whole fruits and vegetables every day. They come in capsules, which can be taken in less than 10 seconds at a cost of about 22 cents per serving. Why wait? Get a wide variety of all your daily recommended servings of whole fruits and vegetables without having to leave your home. Right now, Balance of Nature is offering free shipping and 35% off on any new preferred order. Call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751. Or by going to balanceofnature.com and make sure to receive this special radio offer by using discount code KATE.
Talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
Land of the pit.
Show, Abby Anderson, a high schooler who was told to do a song for graduation years ago and decided that she would take this song and revamp it. And they thought she'd do a pop song, and she didn't. She's in Texas, and she did this. And, you know, I have a lot of hope. I do have hope in our youth. I mean, yes, millennials, it's kind of interesting, but I do have hope that kids are hopefully looking for truth and answers. And in regards to when the media constantly says democracy, I want to hurl something at the TV because we are a republic, and we get that wrong so often, and there's so many things we get wrong. And I'll tell you something, this is why I have the guests that I do, and I've got a constitutional expert, attorney, PhD in American history, and a guy that just gets it right is Dr. Kevin Gutzman. I'm so appreciative of all the books that you have put out on James Madison and Thomas Jefferson. I can't imagine the reverence for what had to happen to create that Constitution, but also what were some of those aha moments for you when looking back at writing these books on the founders that you wish the kids of today knew, Kevin?
Well, the chief realization that kind of surprised me was that people like Jefferson thought, for example, in his case, that his first identity was as a Virginian. That is, a local community was his community. In fact, at one point when he was president, he referred to the federal government as, quote, our foreign government.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Nice.
And actually, when Virginia agreed to the Constitution, by having a ratification convention in 1788, one of the chief delegates explained at the very end, before they took the vote on whether to approve the Constitution, that the powers we're giving to the federal government here are carefully delimited, and if the federal government abuses the powers we're giving it, we can reclaim them.
Wow.
Well, this, of course, is not the understanding of the Constitution we get from people we were talking about before the break, right?
Right. So true.
Because their general idea is we have a government just like Spain's or France's or the United Kingdom's. The central government is unlimited and universally potent. And this is really a 20th century development.
Yes, absolutely.
So that did definitely surprise me.
I bet. Because, you know, you're looking at the 14th Amendment and how abused it is in the press right now, and how governors seem to be taking that up and saying, I am the government of my state and I will do what I want to do. And it's kind of amazing that they don't realize for themselves as well that there are checks and balances, too. And I have found that surprising. That people aren't calling them on that. What have you been feeling since going through all of this in the year 2020?
Well, I can't see that in my state that the legislature has really participated in making these policy decisions.
Yeah.
So here we are again. It's the same issue. People are willing to concede that the federal Supreme Court can make any policy decision it wants to make.
Right.
Within the states in general, the legislatures have just been kind of allowing the governors to do whatever they wanted. What kind of society is that, where the government, can just issue an edict and everybody has to follow it? You will wear a mask.
Yeah.
At your kid's football game, even if the nearest person to you is 20 feet away, we're going to tase you if you don't. You know?
Can you believe that?
I could see that happening in my state too.
Right.
And most people would probably approve.
Yes.
What is that?
I have no idea. So, I was baffled watching that. I couldn't believe it. People just sat there.
Right. And there are healthy men sitting there watching this woman be treated this way.
Yeah.
Really kind of astounding. And this has nothing to do either with the medical question of the efficacy of masks.
Right.
The issue is who should be making these decisions. You know, we'd think in general our government is supposed to be decentralized, so almost all the decisions about what will affect you locally are supposed to be made by your state legislature.
Yes.
People are perfectly happy to have it be the state executive or even the federal judiciary, over which you have just no influence at all.
Yes, that's so true. That is so true.
It's perplexing.
Yeah.
It's perplexing.
And to claim any amendment, which they use several, by the way, as part of their power trip, it's very interesting to me to watch how they kind of, they are very, kind of pat you on the head and go, oh, yeah, we've figured all this out with the Constitution. Don't you worry. And now on to our mandate. And I'm going to mandate's a way around a law. It's not a law for a reason. And so they keep getting away with it because they keep pacifying the public to, oh, yeah, we got this covered. And all the state legislators are very silent this year, extremely silent, which is shocking for sure. Yeah, I'm with you on that one. And so when we're looking at Supreme Court and what honestly has become the political football. And by the way, when I was mentioning Jacobson versus Massachusetts, that decision, it was wrong because you can't force somebody to do something medically. But the thing that's missing from that are options, and options were given in that case. And so it didn't go all the way up the chain judicially because of the forced vaccination. It was about the fine. And I see everyone citing that wrong. And it bothers me because nobody's, I think, willing to read the case, you know, to actually read the case. I'm sure you find a lot of this going on, the assumptions made.
Well, sure. Yeah, it's very common for people just to cite other people's citations. Yeah.
Right.
Sure. That's a common occurrence in academia,
yes.
Certainly.
And so what should we be looking for other than when they cite a case, go read the case, because often it's probably not going to be what you think. But also, what should we be looking for in the Supreme Court justice? Because a lot of people are going, well, I really like this person. They're my same faith. Or I like their stance on abortion, because the focus seems to be on abortion always with Supreme Court, which is kind of ridiculous because it's not a federal law. The states can actually do what they wish to do. They just don't have the guts to do it and to stand alone on that issue. But they're afraid of putting money out on a court case. But what should we be looking for, Kevin?
Well, the big distinction in politics on this issue is one that's related to that question we were talking about before. Mm-hmm. Should the judiciary be in the business of legislating?
Right.
Since the 1930s, essentially, almost unremittingly, it's been in the business of legislating. And one British scholar referred to the American Supreme Court, the federal Supreme Court, as a permanent constitutional convention. But it's actually more powerful than a constitutional convention, because a constitutional convention can only propose amendments, or it could only propose a constitution. And the American Supreme Court has been in the business of just saying, okay, what's been law forever is law no longer, even though you've all voted for this,
right?
And nobody ever voted to change it. And so people are out screaming in the street over the likelihood of replacement of Justice Ginsburg by a Trump appointee, because the Republican Party for nearly 50 years now has stood for the idea that that should not be the role of the judiciary.
Right.
This is not really even a policy question. You know, you can still make whatever policy you want in your state. There's even if the Republicans got what they wanted about remaking the judiciary to return it to the old model, pre-1937 model of letting the states generally make their own laws.
Right.
That doesn't mean that people in California or Massachusetts or New York or Connecticut couldn't have, for example, all the abortions they want, or wouldn't be able to have, you know, young men winning women's state track championships, or, you know, they could do these things if they wanted to.
Right.
They just wouldn't be able to force them on the rest of the country by having a federal judicial majority declare that the Constitution required them. So really what needs to happen is that there needs to be another appointee from President Trump who's publicly on the record having said that his or her general position is that the judiciary should be a judiciary, not a legislative branch. That essentially the term originalism is a kind of shorthand for this position I've been describing.
Yeah.
So if the person is an originalist, it may be from time to time you'll have disagreements on particular cases with her votes, but in general, the vector of the judiciary's behavior should be toward letting us make more of our decisions by having a debate with our neighbors and then voting for legislators. That's the way the American system is supposed to work, right? It wasn't we have too high of taxes. It was no taxation without representation, right? It's supposed to be the representatives who make the laws.
Absolutely.
And you do that through respecting the principle of federalism, which will only happen if we end up with a substantial originalist majority on the Supreme Court. That's the bottom line.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. I really agree with that. And you know what bothers me? And even as a woman, I can say this. I can get away with saying this. You probably don't feel like you can, but I can. Why are we looking for a woman? Are we looking for ovaries? Why are we wanting or having it have to be a woman? I just want the best person for the job. I want the person that understands the Constitution, woman or man, since we only have two biological genders. And I get a little, look at what we've kind of segued into. It's like, it has to be a woman, and then it has to follow the check marks of our Republican Party. Why? I mean, why not an understanding of the Constitution in the way that you just said it? That should be the real requirement, the only requirement. Because if you were to describe the three branches of government and the totem pole of power, how would you tell people as far as the power they actually have and the versus the power we give them? Right? The distinction of that.
Former Vice President Biden has said that he's compiling a list of African-American women. So he's not only going to restrict his selections to the female sex, but he's going to go only for African-American females.
Yes.
It's just, of course, once again, this is irrelevant.
Right.
To
it is.
The general issue, which is, how are these judges going to behave, right? Are they going to respect the constitutional structure? Are they going to accept that the principle of federalism is a guiding principle and the principle of republicanism is a guiding principle? In other words, it's supposed to be a decentralized government in which the legislators legislate instead of a centralized government for many purposes in which a lot of the most important policy decisions are made by Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who was never elected, who never had to stand for re-election or even could have anybody really criticize her.
Yes.
I'm not just picking on her, although she's definitely emblematic of this.
Yes, she is.
Because she was all for what I've been decrying.
Right.
So,
I mean, how would you like to get nominated for your ovaries?
I think saying we're going to pick a woman, I guess female voters are the majority of voters in this.
Right.
Apparently is what they like. So politicians tell us.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, same thing with president. It's like, if I need that much validation, being a woman, and that's the only thing that validates me, A, there's a problem, and B, I would never want the job because I have ovaries. Well, I have ovaries. I mean, why were you nominated? Because I have ovaries. I mean, I can't imagine that kind of thinking in America. I mean, is that as good as it gets? I sure hope not. I just want the best person for the job. Be right back. More with Dr. Kevin Guzman when I come back. Stay with us.
Talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
Thy words in templed hills. My heart with rapture thrills. Like that above freedom.
Welcome back, Kate Daly Show. I have the great Dr. Kevin Guzman on with me, and it's always a thrill because he's visited the show several times, and I'm always excited when he comes on because it was such a voice of reason and common sense and understanding of our republic. I love that. Also, I just want to mention, go to Balance of Nature. Balance of Nature is a great supplement, 31 fruits and vegetables. Our food supply completely sucks. Make sure that you get nutrients in your system. That's really the only way you can actually help your immune system. It isn't because of a cloth mask. Your immune system isn't located inside that mask. It's in our bodies. And so this is about the best way you can actually increase that immune system is to actually do something that benefits you from the inside out, and that would be nutrients. 31 fruits and vegetables. They take out the air and water. You get the nutrients. It's an amazing supplement. I do my homework, you know that. And this was the company that was head and shoulders above the rest. And the supply chain that they use of fruits and vegetables is just amazing because it's pesticide free and everything free. And it's just fruits and vegetables at their finest. Go to balanceofnature.com, put in the code Kate, K-A-T-E, and you can get 35% off using that code and also free shipping. Do it. And do it for order extra. I would right now. we might, you know, just order extra. Trust me on that one. In fact, Dr. Guzman, so happy that you're with me. And we were just talking about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. You should probably share, because I think this is such a... this is such a common thing to happen in America. And then the women, all the feminists in America go, oh, where would we be without you? And it's amazing to me because the stuff that they fight for, even though we already have equality before the law, they think that they're saving us by instigating some of these court cases. But you might want to just reference the court case we were just talking about off the air, because it's so interesting to me what they pride themselves on as justices. Oh, gosh.
Okay. Well, there's a description of this case in my book, Politically Incorrect Guide to the Constitution, which we mentioned before.
Yes.
Justice Ginsburg, when she was still a litigator, that is before she became a judge, was involved in a case called Craig versus Boren. Mm-hmm. And Craig versus Boren had to do with the minimum drinking age in the state of Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. So essentially, the Oklahoma legislature had researched the question and discovered that young men aged 18 to 21 were 1,111% as likely to be arrested for DUI as young women that age. Mm-hmm. 11.11 times as likely to be arrested for DUI as young women. So the Oklahoma legislature decided, all right, we'll have an 18-year drinking age for young women and a 21-year drinking age for young men. And Ginsburg was on the side that said, oh, no, this is morally offensive. This is arbitrary. This is based on old-fashioned sex stereotypes. And so in the case of Craig versus Boren, for the first time, the Supreme Court established an intermediate standard of review for sex discrimination cases. And in his opinion, for the majority, Justice William Brennan, who was the most legislatively inclined justice in the history of the Supreme Court, excoriated the legislature of Oklahoma for its, he said, outmoded views, right? So now people who are listening to this may just want to stop and think for a moment, okay, I remember being aged 18 to 21. Is it the case that men in that age bracket are more likely to be driving while intoxicated than women? You don't have to answer me. Just think about it. And in fact, Kate and I were talking. She said she went to school in California. I was that age in Texas. And certainly in my experience, men were far more likely to be drinking and driving aged 18 to 21 than women were. This is, for example, a reason why young men have higher auto insurance rates.
Exactly.
Right? They're just more reckless. So anyway, there are just a long list of cases now
Pesky
in which
facts.
Justice Ginsburg was on the side of getting rid of sex discriminations like this, which were perfectly reasonable, were not based on hostility to either of the sexes, and existed in one form or another in every state.
So
when you're hearing people say, well, women would still be second class,
it's ridiculous,
quote unquote, still be second class if it weren't for Ginsburg, think about this, right? Are we better off now that young men have the same drinking age as young women? Does it make sense?
Right.
I'd say no.
Yeah.
So
I have to agree with you. And she when she got to Rutgers, she fought for, she wanted the same pay as all the male counterparts that had been there that had earned their dues. Well, they had earned their dues. They had been there for some time, but she wanted to walk in and demand equal pay just because she has ovaries. Well, so, you know, here she says, listen, women, I'm fighting for you. I'm fighting for you. Well, there is something to paying dues. There is something to being there with longevity that women need to understand. And the other thing was, she fought for men to have spousal welfare payment supports through our tax dollars so they could stay home while their women, while their wives worked. Well, go back to that period of time. There wasn't a whole lot of men interested in doing that. It used to be kind of a form of embarrassment to have to go do that. Yet she fought for it. I mean, this is the kind of nonsense that makes up the Ruth Bader Ginsburg career. And when I learned today that her trainer was doing push-ups by her casket, I just thought, well, yeah, because you're going to have these complete loons that worship her. I don't get the worshiping, and I don't get the women that say, where would we be without her? I'm not standing on the shoulders of Ruth Bader Ginsburg as a radio host of a talk show. I'm standing on the shoulders of founders, the founders who, with the brilliance of our Constitution, made sure that they identified the rights that we get from God, and then also the fact that we already had equality before the law. Culturally, there were some cultural changes that took place along the way, but my gosh, we're talking about the fact that I have to thank America for that. Not Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Oh, dear.
Well, one thing to notice about this, you know, people who are listening may think, well, I agreed with that part of what the two of them just said, and I disagreed with that other part. But this gets back to the point I was making earlier. These are legislative considerations, right?
Right.
Whether you think it makes sense to have that kind of a policy is something that you ought to be determining by electing people to your state legislature, by voting, right?
Exactly.
We ought to have a discussion about it in our state legislative election process. And it could be that people in Oregon and people in Alabama will come to different conclusions and they'll adopt different laws in Oklahoma from the ones they have in Michigan or Illinois. That's fine. That's the way the system is supposed to work.
Exactly.
My general position is people would be happier in Oregon and Illinois and Oklahoma and Alabama if they got to make these rules locally. But what Ginsburg stood for was, we need to centralize all of it.
Mm-hmm.
We need to have a group of politically connected attorneys meeting in secret. All of whom have gone to one or the other of two law schools in New England. They need to make our decisions. Now, you might think about this question. Well, are lawyers who've gone to Harvard and Yale, made a ton of money, become famous, gotten to know some politicians, and ended up being appointed to the Supreme Court, Do they have the typical opinions? Are they going to be representative of what most people think or want?
Yeah.
And my answer is, well, do I even have to answer that question? It seems pretty obvious.
Yeah.
That's why people like that don't end up being elected. So, it just makes no sense to change our government structure from the one that the Constitution contemplated to this situation we have now, in which people on the Supreme Court end up making these policy decisions. They really are not moral decisions. Whether young men have to wait 3 years longer to get to drink than young women do is not a moral question.
Yes.
It's a prudential question. It's a matter of local preference, really.
Yes.
So I think it's just a usurpation that these people on the Supreme Court have been engaged in.
I can't say it better myself. And we applaud the fact of when they abuse the authority, we applaud them. We wait with bated breath for them to come out and tell us the law of the country, the Supreme Court. It's amazing because they cannot make law. And I love that. I love that what you just said. Is there a justice that you think gets it right? Is there a justice that you think, okay, they understand?
Well, we've had several people in the period, especially when the parties have been divided on this question, we've had several people appointed to federal courts who've taken more or less the position I've been describing. I mean, the one who was first a kind of lone voice in this area, but came to be at the center of a large group of them was the late Chief Justice William Rehnquist. So when he went on the Supreme Court in the early 70s, he was kind of the lone fellow standing out there in the wilderness. But over time, there came to be other people on the Supreme Court who took this position, famously Justice Scalia, Justice Thomas, who's on the Supreme Court. And we have these two new appointees who both said in their confirmation processes that they were going to take the same position. But it's, you know, for me, it's not a matter of really choosing a hero. It's just I have my own standard of the way that judges should behave, and I'm evaluating them, right?
So
it's not that I want to emulate them.
Yeah.
They have a task, you know, and they take an oath to uphold the Constitution. That doesn't mean choose the policies they like. That means basically keep the frame of the government functional and let us make our own decisions, right? No taxation without representation. The revolution was for representation, right?
Exactly.
It was for making decisions by having a Republican process in your own community.
Yes. Amen to that. And I think, you know, so many people think that it's an appointment for life. It isn't. It's with good behavior and they can be ousted. But for some reason, why do we not oust them with bad behavior? Because it turned into a political football? I mean, is that why? Kevin? Wonder if we lost him. probably did. Darn it. That always happens, doesn't it? All right. So I do know that with good behavior, they are supposed to stay on the Supreme Court. But other than that, they are supposed to be ousted. So, you know, but then what is the half the country or a third of the country say, oh, it's politicized? Well, we should be evaluating them for their behavior consistently. Hopefully Kevin will call back, but, I just always so appreciate his take. Can I just tell you, I think he might've been on a cell phone, so, I won't have time to get him back on for the remaining minute and a half of the show, but let me tell you this, we cannot look at it like an appointment for life. We have to look at the fact, are they going to respect the states, in their decisions? I know that for sure. I also know that that they are not as powerful as they think of themselves, and that we should not be waiting for them to announce their federal decision based on a state case and act like that goes for the entire nation. It's just wrong. And so there's just so many things like this. Now, Allison Rushing, I'm a little more partial to her, although over Amy Coney Barrett, who liked the lockdown, who didn't mind the lockdown. I thought that was wrong. Barbara Lagoa, she's an interesting one, too, to keep an eye on. There's been some things that they've all done right. And you have to kind of parse out the things that you just think, well, there's all of them have decisions that they've made or things that they've said that bother me. So I'm not quite sure. I'm not quite sure what they're going to do on the bench either. And that's another problem is we've given them so much power. We have given them so much power, more power than they were ever supposed to have, that we've created this group of people that once appointed could never be taken out of their appointment, which isn't true. And we look to them for telling us how to think and how to feel about everything. I do think that there can be people that that, you know, understand what they're doing and know what they're doing. But and I look for those decisions. But I'll tell you something. There's something really wrong with the way that we go about this whole process. And it should have never been politicized. It should have been the fact that we are a republic, that we should understand our form of government, that we shouldn't allow the fact that it's women only really bothers me. It really does. I think because the fact that I just want the best person. Why do we have to have a group of women? It's kind of like when Biden was choosing Kamala Harris. You know, why have to have a black woman? Because he wants the vote. It doesn't care about substance or principle. Neither one of them, they ran into a principle, they wouldn't recognize it. And so that's our biggest problem, I think, in America is we're not... We're used to being kind of used and talked to in this way. And we're also used to going by emotion and party politics and right left politics. Sad. It's really sad to me. We've got to pull ourselves out of that thinking coma, start thinking about things in such a different way. Dr. Kevin Gutzman, you can actually find his books, he's got some amazing books, The Politically Incorrect Guide to the Constitution, New York Times bestseller, and books on Thomas Jefferson, James Madison. He's done some stellar work and really appreciate all of his efforts. Of course, we'll have him back again talking about this very thing. And join me in the next hour. I'm going to talk about CIA front companies and all kinds of stuff in the next hour coming up. So don't go anywhere. KateDalyRadio.com.